The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's already Friday here at beautiful Edstone, just gorgeous week of weather. The window is back open here in the studio, so I can look outside, thanks to some of you who submitted some suggestions for how to kill off the yellow swarming flies. That's what they're called, according to Sam's in-depth research into these nuisances. So we've tried to put in place some things that will prevent the flies from taking over the studio. And right now it's nice and calm and peaceful. And as I say, you can look out the window today and see this beautiful spring day here at Edstone. I think the temperatures are going to get up to the upper 50s. And as I say, it's a bright, sunshiny day. Also, we're coming up to daylight savings time tomorrow. Finally, for 3 weeks, we've been hurrying to get everything prepared for a 12 p.m. broadcast as opposed to 1 p.m. So I've aged 5 years over the last 3 weeks. Sam has aged 10 years. 3 weeks' time. It's been our trial for the past 3 weeks, but everything returns to normal next week. If you listen outside the United States, I guess in particular it would impact Europe and the UK, probably other areas too, but the time switch is Saturday night here in the UK, so on Monday's program, it'll be back to normal here in the UK at 1 p.m., and on the continent, it'll be at 2 p.m. A couple of things to note as far as the website is concerned. We have a new voice message tab, or I guess button, on the TDRS page. The little radio box for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on the front page of the website. If you click on one of the programs there, it goes to the new layout and the design. And if you just scroll down a little bit, you can see the big, what is it, red or yellow? It's a red button, I think. There you go. It's a big red button right in the middle that says send a voice message and then start recording. So instead of you hearing me read your emails, we can actually hear from you directly if you'd like. If you'd like to send in a voice message, and all that I'm asking is that you inundate Sam's email box or whatever it is that collects these video recordings. You can see on there that it says if you'd like to include your name, we'd love to at least maybe give your first name when we go through some of this feedback. But you don't have to. If you want it to be anonymous, that's fine. What would be good is if you at least told us what city, or if not the city, at least the region that you're from, so that we could just set up some of those clips. So I don't know when we'll play them. We don't just get tons and tons of emails, so I'm not sure how many voice messages we'll get. But if you send them in, we'll most likely play a good many of them. We had our book club. It resumed last night, so there probably will be some content. Speaking of that TDRS website page, you'll probably have some new content on the book club section, so you can be looking for that as well. We've got new videos at thetrumpet.com this weekend. My father's newest is No Freedom Without Law, and he talks some about this this recent scandal with all these celebrities or millionaires that are basically bribing these college administrations or these universities to accept their children, even if their marks aren't high enough to get in. We have that one. We have the one I produced here in the UK a week or so ago on family is a gift from God. We take some of those clips from Benjamin Watson, I think his name was, the football player from New Orleans. And we've converted some of that material into a TV program. We went through some of that on this show as well. Coming up on today's program, this radio show, the second segment's going to be devoted to the homelessness epidemic in Seattle. And we've got quite a few clips to go through with that. So we'll probably end this first segment a little shorter than we usually do, just to allow for more time in the second segment. Lastly, as far as our website is concerned, Jeremiah Jacques has a piece it's featured at the top of the website right now. Russia deploys nuclear-capable bombers to Crimea, and the subhead under that says, Europe's dreadful fear of Vladimir Putin, its next-door neighbor, is going to help shape and form the Holy Roman Empire rather suddenly. We've said this for so many years, that the rise of Russia, the reemergence of Russia, it's going to help shape and form the Holy Roman Empire, and it's going to happen suddenly. Mr. Armstrong said this. I've played that clip for you numerous times. People are going to be shocked when they see the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. What's happening in Russia, what's happening in Crimea, it's only going to accelerate the formation of this seventh and final resurrection. Jeremiah says, a senior official has said the Russian government has deployed squadrons of nuclear-capable bomber aircraft to the Crimean Peninsula, which Russia illegally annexed from Ukraine in 2014. That just happened 5 years ago. And now they've got control of Crimea. It's right on Europe's doorstep. Now they're deploying these squadrons of nuclear-capable bomber aircraft. In case you're interested in this development, CNN or whoever, you might want to keep tabs on this. Pretty amazing, these stories that are just ignored and overlooked because of politics. It's all about politics, not just in America, in Britain too. Nigel Farage has a piece today in The Telegraph saying only a revolution can save British politics now. It's so dysfunctional. It's so broken. That he says anyway, and he has quite a few people, quite a few followers. Today's March 29th, by the way. This was supposed to be the day for Brexit to happen. Today, Britain was supposed to leave. What happened? What happened? They had 2 years to prepare for it, and they couldn't do it. They can't agree on anything. All that they know is that whatever proposal comes forward, they don't want that one. Farage says here, when Brexiteers wake up tomorrow, the ghastly reality that Britain is still a member of the EU will sink in. Those empty promises made by Theresa May that we would leave the bloc at 11 p.m. this evening, deal or no deal, just said it over and over again. Deal or no deal, March 29th, we're gone. That's what the people voted for. That's what the people wanted. Those empty promises will doubtless echo in their minds. The sense of betrayal will be palpable. Farage says, I have never known such levels of anger and disgust at our political class as exist now. Remain backing MPs, seizing control of the House of Commons agenda this week, marked a new low, and yet, even after hijacking Parliament in that horribly arrogant way, these anti-Democrats could not find a majority for anything. I don't know whether to laugh or cry, says Farage. Not sure if I should laugh or cry. It's so sad and tragic. What could possibly save us at this point? Well, he says, only a revolution. Across the Atlantic, you've got the ongoing saga following the release of the Mueller report, the Russia hoax. This article at the American Spectator commenting on, I guess, something Andy McCarthy wrote earlier this week, where he asked, how long has Mueller known that there's no collusion? How long has he known this? This is what the president's enemies were using to say that he was guilty of treason for almost 2 years. The Spectator says here, imagine being accused of treason and the exonerating information has been known for 2 years, maybe more, and has been sat on by the district attorney investigating so that he can investigate and harass friends, to one, mollify the slobbering mobs to show that at least there are some heads on pikes, and two, to settle some scores for the cops and other dirty AGs, and then three, and this is the one that I really want to draw attention to take the spotlight off the evil done to bring the spurious charges. Yes, it's been a massive distraction. That's what it amounts to. All of this, the delay. How long? Robert Mueller is a smart guy, as this article brings out. He's a smart guy. He couldn't see through the gaping holes of this Russian hoax 22 months ago. The Steele dossier, he didn't see through that document. That hit job, a political smear campaign. That's how it all started. Funded by Hillary Clinton's campaign and working in conjunction with Russian sources. This is the real Russian collusion story. And it's been given cover by this sham of an investigation. Monica Crowley, she makes some of the points we've made through the week here. After 2 years of this, $30 million, you remember all the statistics we gave you on Monday's show. The 19 prosecutors, the 40 FBI agents, the hundreds, even thousands of subpoenas, witnesses, foreign governments weighing in even. Well, now the report's been released. 300 pages of it or so, and we got the summary on Sunday. And a few of the president's enemies have conceded on this, that it was vindication for the president. But most have not, most will not. They will not accept the truth. Crowley says the entire Russia conspiracy, orchestrated by high-ranking figures in the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton campaign, and broader leftist network was designed to undermine and then destroy the crass interloper who posed an immediate existential threat to all of them. They had to crush him before he would crush them. That's what it was from the beginning. It was a big hoax intended to destroy Donald Trump's campaign. She says, making the same point that the Spectator does, it was also designed to provide maximum distraction away from their political crimes. There were a lot of crimes committed here. And so the investigation, among other things, was intended to be a distraction. It was intended to turn the spotlight away from the real crimes, from the real collusion, from the real obstruction of justice. It says ensuring that these corrupt players don't slip justice is critical to rightfully restoring Mr. Trump's presidency. See, William Barr's in there now, and he's trying to restore the reputation of the DOJ and the FBI. And she says if that's going to happen, then there better be some prosecutions here. There better be some proper investigations. There better be some indictments. Listen to this summary about the actual Russian collusion. Mrs. Clinton's campaign and the Democratic National Committee enlisted a left-wing opposition research firm, Fusion GPS, which hired a former British spy and rabid Trump hater, Christopher Steele, who sought dirt on Mr. Trump from shadowy Russian contacts, among others. Mr. Steele then compiled a phony dossier on Mr. Trump based on the unsubstantiated, uncorroborated nonsense from these sources and helped to pass it off to pivotal figures in the Obama administration and friendlies in the media. With the lies teed up, these figures weaponized them, including using them to secure warrants to spy on the Trump campaign from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which was not told that the evidence, quote-unquote, was a pack of political smears derived, at least in part, from Russian sources. Russian sources. So, what do? Well, they wiretapped American citizens. They unmasked General Flynn. They leaked his name to the press. They set him up even before that. Well, I guess it would have been after the unmasking. They set him up, General Flynn. And now he's going to jail for a misstatement. A statement the FBI didn't even think was false when he made it. But they had time after this 22 months of investigating. They had time to figure out, well, actually he did make a false statement. So now he has to go to jail. So here comes Attorney General William Barr, and now he sees as his top priority, he's got to restore the trust in these institutions, the DOJ and the FBI. And so Crowley is saying, she's saying that because of this, if he follows through on it, she recommends a number of people putting their attorneys on speed dial. Loretta Lynch, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Sally Yates, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Bruce Ohr, and his Fusion GPS employee wife, Nellie, John Brennan, Susan Rice, Samantha Power, Ben Rhodes, Crowley says, and then there are the two previously sacred cows at the top, former President Barack Obama and Mrs. Clinton. How about that? All the way to the top, she writes about how the president, the previous president, how he kept such a tight control on those federal agencies in the executive branch, the DOJ and the FBI. So much so that it would be preposterous to think that he didn't know about these things, that he wasn't involved about these investigations, the FISA warrants and such. And so, yes, it goes all the way to the top. And if there's going to be any real justice here, then these are the individuals that need to be investigated and indicted and sentenced. Crowley says it's time to fight fire with fire. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see how much fire the Republican Party brings, or the Trump DOJ brings, headed up by the new Attorney General. We'll see. Just judging by some of the images at that House Judiciary hearing, Republicans calling for Adam Schiff to resign from his position. He chairs the committee, and all nine of the Republicans said, you need to step down. He was the one that said he had all the evidence. He saw the evidence of collusion. And now the report says there was no collusion, and he stands by the evidence. He's been investigated, the president has, by Robert Mueller for 22 months, by the House, by the Senate, and who knows who else. Adam Schiff won't accept it. And so there they were, back and forth yesterday. Devin Nunes, he's also a House member, a Republican. And he says that they're ready to send criminal referrals as early as next week. Multiple referrals for a number of different crimes. The article says here, this is from Breitbart, it's quoting Nunes, who says, as of now, it'll be one criminal referral, but with multiple referrals on a number of different crimes. That's what he told Breitbart the other day. So we'll see. We'll see if the Trump administration is prepared to fight fire with fire, judging by what he said in that interview on Fox the other night, and then again, to some degree, at his rally in Michigan last night. We'll see. He's sounding like he wants to reveal all the classified documents and put it out there for everyone to see. But will they actually go after the perpetrators? The ones who created the hoax? The ones who abused their power? That's what we'll see, I suppose, in the coming weeks and months. And in another way, if this fight does continue, if it persists. It just serves as, in many ways, it serves as a distraction from so many of these other stories that receive, like we'll cover in the very next segment, that receive just no covers, not nationally anyway. There's some good local reporting, as you'll hear in the next segment, when we talk about Seattle's homeless crisis. But for the most part, these kinds of serious stories, they don't receive national coverage. It's a shame what we see happening to the cities of the United States. Stay tuned for more on that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. If you'd like to submit a voice message, don't forget to check out the TDRS box on the website, the page, and just scroll down a little ways, about halfway, and you'll come to the big red button in the middle that says, "Send us a voice message." We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Many would say that the Pacific Northwest in the United States is one of the most beautiful areas in all the nation. I would certainly say that. I grew up in eastern Washington, I think about 4 or 5 hours from Seattle. And even Seattle back in that day, the mid-1980s, when we would occasionally cross the Cascades on a YOU tournament to participate in a basketball tournament or a volleyball tournament somewhere around Seattle, maybe in Tacoma. It was always, for a teen, it was electrifying coming out of the small city of Pasco, Washington, as I say, crossing the mountain range in the middle of Washington. And then after getting through that, seeing Mount Rainier, Mount Hood, down near Oregon, or in Oregon, I guess it would be. All of those visits, I can remember my father taking me to Seattle too, just on a father-son trip to watch the state championships, the high school basketball championships. I forget where it was played, maybe in the Tacoma Dome. Can't remember. Of course, he took me to the King Dome a few times to watch the Seattle Mariners. And I can't remember the year that they imploded that massive structure, but it was a sad day for me. I saw a bit of my childhood just blow up and disappear. Then later on, as I was getting ready for marriage in the mid-1990s. My wife, as it happens, also comes from that area. She actually lived in the Seattle area. Gig Harbor, Washington is where she grew up. And so I had some trips out there to see her, and we went to the Key Arena once to see the Seattle Sonics. They're, of course, now in Oklahoma City, so they followed me. In any event, a beautiful area, rolling hills, right on the Puget Sound. Well, you look at Seattle today, and really, you look at it just in the last 5 years, as this report brings out, it is staggering to see what's happening to that beautiful, what used to be a beautiful city. This story from the American Council on Science and Health, this author here is describing the scene on the streets of Seattle, seeing people staggering along, grasping out for a wall to hold themselves up, mumbling to themselves, falling down. And then the people, the ones who aren't doing that, just walking on by, not fazed by it at all because, well, they see it all the time. And then in the case of this one example that he brings out in his article later that same night, that stumbling drunk or drug addict, whatever it is, he's dead. Maybe it was exposure. Maybe it was a drug overdose. We just don't know for sure. Where are you, he asks. Are you in Damascus? Are you in Moscow? No, you're in downtown Seattle. That's where you are. Last year, 191 people lost their lives in circumstances just like that. People staggering along on the streets of Seattle. 191. And as is brought out in this article, for years, local officials, law enforcement agencies, they've been able to do nothing. It's the city officials and the government primarily. Law enforcement would do more if they could, but in many ways they're handcuffed. This article says this doesn't come as a surprise to anyone who lives in Seattle or just about anywhere on the West Coast. Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego are all facing similar issues. The reason, ultimately, is the same everywhere. We no longer provide treatment to drug-addicted or mentally ill people who cannot or will not care for themselves. It says society has decided that it's more compassionate to allow these unfortunate souls to make their own choices, even if those choices are irrational, self-destructive, and dangerous to the community. It's compassionate, you see. This is a liberal bastion. All of those cities that were just mentioned. This also is a wealthy city. Some of the wealthiest people in the United States live in the Great Northwest. They live in and around Seattle. And the city is dying. The city is dying. A local TV station in Seattle, KOMO, this reporter, Eric Johnson, he put together an hour-long documentary with his team. And let me tell you, it's powerful. It's the kind of thing that should be taking up an hour of prime time. With all the time that the 24-hour news networks have, you would think they could find an hour for this. You would think. Get rid of a segment with the five talking heads. We've seen that a zillion times. And how about this? How about something that exposes this? You're not going to see it. Except on the local level, maybe. And even there, I assume it's pretty rare. But congratulations to this reporter who actually got onto the streets of Seattle, who talked to the business people, the owners of small businesses, who talked to the homeless, who talked to the police, who talked to the city officials. And what a story they all have to tell. This first clip is from a public hearing where the residents of Seattle are there talking to their city officials, and you can just hear for yourself how disgusted they are with their leadership. Clip one.
No Robert's rule. Community discussion.
Last May 2nd at a town hall meeting in Ballard, simmering anger boiled over into all-out rage.
So why do we see so many people living outdoors?
Will you manage these camps, and will you enforce the law?
There has evolved a profound disconnect, and rarely has it been more vividly laid out than in this exchange.
If property crime is committed, violence is committed, you need to call 911 and the police.
You've lost all credibility when you say, you said two words. You said, call 911. Do you understand that the police have told us to vote you all out so that they can do their jobs? And you're telling us to call 911? You're smiling. You think it's funny? You think it's funny the way we're living?
That's the people of Seattle talking to their city officials. A profound disconnect. The officials are up there on stage saying, well, if you got a problem, call 911. We've done that. We've done that dozens of times, in some cases, hundreds of times, and nothing gets done. And the problem is worsening. There is no solution in sight. This reporter talks to a business owner. And if you watch the video, you see right behind his store, just piles of garbage, tents, homelessness. This is right near his place of business. Here's clip two.
The city mayor doesn't give the cops authority. That's the problem. We need somebody with some weights and tell them, it's not legal living on the sidewalk. It's city ordinance. It's not legal living here. Why can't we enforce the law?
Why can't we just enforce the laws, you see? It's the same problem with in the larger sense, it's the same problem with America on the southern border. The laws are there to protect the border. Now, a wall would certainly help as well. But even if the laws themselves were strictly enforced, you could stop all of that illegal activity. If you just enforced the laws, the ordinances, in the city of Seattle, you could stop or at least reduce some of the crime. In 2017, New York City had 1,448 property crimes per 100,000 residents. That would be things like burglary, larceny, theft, arson, shoplifting, and vandalism. 1,400 for New York, 2,500 for Los Angeles, 3,200 for Chicago, and 5,200 for Seattle. Seattle, just way ahead. Twice as much, more than twice as much as Los Angeles. Three times as much as New York City. This city, as with the others on the West Coast, there was a time when it was just a beautiful city, right on the water, right on the coast, right in the Puget Sound. And all of these crimes, and a lot of the perpetrators, they're committing the crimes over and over again. This documentary, it talks to a guy named Scott Lindsay, a Seattle resident, who's done some research and said that the most frequent offenders, they just keep showing up in Seattle's so-called criminal justice system. It's a broken system, but they just show up and they show up again. He put together a list of the 100 most frequent offenders, and they're responsible for something like 3,500 criminal cases. This is Lindsay in the documentary, clip three.
The fact that this system could go on with, in effect, 100% failure rate for so long without anybody raising questions, without city council hosting hearings, without any action being taken, is something that it's hard for me to explain.
It's hard to explain that all of this is worsening and nothing's done about it. The city council hearings, they're rare. And when they do have them, you heard the first clip, people are irate. They can't believe it. Call 911. Are you serious? A lot of the crimes, this is part of the problem. This is why there's so many repeat offenders. A lot of the crimes, they're not even reported anymore. The police, they're just inundated with these crimes. And then, of course, they're handcuffed. They're not supposed to draw attention to the smaller ones, so they just deal with the bigger crimes. And so the smaller crimes are out of control, and there's more and more serious crimes being committed as well. Here's the narrator and the reporter, Eric Johnson, in clip 4.
A report received is when police file a report of a case requesting that the city attorney's office file charges on behalf of the city. Back in 2006, for every 100 reports received, 25 of them didn't get filed. How times have changed. In 2016, the latest data we have, for every 100 police reports, 46 of them, almost twice as many, didn't get filed. Nothing happened at all. They were completely ignored. Of the remaining 54 of the original 100, one-third of them were then outright dismissed, thrown out. Another third were listed as other, with no resolution. So only 18 of the original 100 reports filed by police actually result in convictions. 18. And of those 18 convictions, after plea deals and lenient sentences, very few cases end up with anyone really being held accountable. Those are 2016 numbers. We have no reason to believe the trends haven't continued since then.
The numbers speak for themselves. Facts are stubborn things. The ones that even are convicted through the system, they end up right back out on the street. And then they commit, in many cases, they go out and commit the same crimes. KOMO, the TV station that put this together, they sent out this generic questionnaire for police officers in the Seattle area. And the officers had to fill out the questionnaire anonymously. They didn't want to go, they didn't want to put their names out there publicly for fear of retaliation. There's a lot of politics even in the police departments. We're not going to draw attention to this problem, this epidemic. So these police officers, they had to fill out the questionnaire anonymously. That's the way you get your voice heard today. And even there, it's just on a local TV station. It's certainly not serious enough for CNN to investigate. Here's a bit about that anonymous questionnaire, clip 5.
One officer wrote simply, "Yes, I am frustrated because I'm a law enforcement officer that is told not to enforce the law." Another wrote, "It's simple. Start keeping criminals in jail. Judges need to stop giving them ridiculously low sentences, and prosecutors need to stop accepting cheesy plea deals and actually lock people up when they commit a crime. That's all it would take to drastically lower Seattle's crime rate."
That's all it would take. Just enforce the law. Just enforce the law. But like we saw earlier this week in Chicago, there's plenty of prosecutors even that are quite happy to let criminals go. There's plenty of prosecutors. We've seen this for the past 2 years. There's plenty of prosecutors out there that are only prepared to go after political enemies. Never mind the actual criminals breaking the actual laws. They use the system of justice to target their enemies politically. It's a broken system. It's prophesied in Habakkuk 1. Here's more regarding that questionnaire, clip 6.
Another officer said, people come here because it's called Freeattle, and they believe if they come here, they will get free food, free medical treatment, free mental health treatment, a free tent, free clothes, and will be free of prosecution for just about everything. And they're right. It didn't used to be that way. Law enforcement officers used to be able to enforce the laws. This officer continues, in the last 5 years, there has been a culture shift, and it started with the legislature decriminalizing felonies and dumping convicts onto the streets.
Just in the last 5 years, isn't that sad? Sad and tragic. They go to Freeattle because everything's free. Because the city officials, the state government officials, they have a lot of compassion, don't you know? They really care about people. And so they allow anything and everything to go on. And just in the last 5 years, what a culture shift we've seen. Decriminalizing felonies? Oh, yes. All in the name of compassion. A bit more here on the questionnaire, clip 7.
And then there is this. An officer says, even if quality warrant arrests are made, the judicial system sees fit to let them out of jail within a couple of days, often the next day. Why are we risking our lives to take felony-level fugitives into custody if they're just going to be released? Prosecutor's office and judges alike seem to be drinking all the Kool-Aid, causing a huge disconnect and a broken system with absolutely no teeth.
A broken system with no teeth. It makes you think of No Freedom Without Law, the booklet. I've got an excerpt from that here in just a second. But here's Washington, one of the most liberal states in the United States, and Seattle together with it, a bastion of liberalism. And all of these freedoms, quote unquote, the freedom to come to Seattle, to get free things, free medical treatment, free food, a free tent, free clothes. And, well, they're coming. And then they have the freedom to get addicted to drugs and roam the streets and commit crime again and again and again. This documentary, the host here, he interviews a homeless man on the streets of Seattle. And listen to this, clip 8.
You're a user, right? What's your drug of choice?
I use methamphetamines.
Yeah.
And I try to at least use it once a day. But I don't really consider myself a drug abuser.
You like the meth?
I love it.
Remember that list of familiar faces? Travis is on it. 34 criminal cases in 4 years. Things like assault, attempted rape, trespassing.
You're on a list, you know.
Nice.
There's a list of the 100. They came out with the 100 frequent flyers.
Really?
Friendly faces.
Of everything?
Of all. The entire.
Which one am I?
Which number on the list?
Yeah.
Oh, you're up there.
Nice.
You're up there.
I was just saying, like, I've definitely been the most in Seattle.
He's on the streets of Seattle. He's homeless. He's addicted to drugs. And he's going around assaulting people, attempting rape, trespassing, in and out of the justice system, comes in briefly, then he's back out on the streets. And then you hear him there. He's proud of it. He's proud of it. And he's taken up to stealing so that he can fund his addiction, clip 9.
Well, I'm actually not even high right now.
Travis is outrageously unapologetic about his life and his world. He could care less about yours.
Do you steal for your habit?
I actually just started stealing last Monday. I started stealing.
He just started it. He just started shoplifting. Shoplifting is a huge problem in Seattle. This is what they have to do to feed their addiction. There's one business owner interviewed in this documentary as well, and she said that her business has been... She reported 599 cases of shoplifting over a 19-month stretch. 599, and 8 of those cases, 8 of them, ended up in some form of prosecution. 8 out of 599. Basically, you can shoplift, and unless you assault someone on the way out, you get away with it. You get away with it. And these businesses, they're reporting it. They're reporting it over and again. And the police, they can't do anything. Because, well, the government officials say you've got to go easy on so-called petty crimes. And so they do. Here's one last exchange with this homeless man, clip 10.
Will you continue to do that?
Oh, I'm having a blast now. It is so much fun.
What should the system do with a guy like you?
I think that this system has done what any viable, legitimate system would. And they've really, like, exalted me and, like, shown deference and love towards me. And, like, I don't feel like I'll ever be arrested again. I haven't been in jail for, like, a year and 3 months or so, you know? So a change like that, responding to a big change, definitely shows that I have conquered the criminal justice system.
He's conquered the criminal justice system, this homeless man, who has been involved in 34 criminal cases. He's conquered it. Now, you hear over in Washington, D.C., not Washington, the state, all of this excitement about the Green New Deal, handouts for everyone, including those who are unwilling to work. Is that policy going to reduce homelessness? Or will that worsen the problem? Todd Wiebke, he's a former Seattle police officer. He's one of the good guys that was out trying to stop crime on the streets. And he quit. He's fed up. He was trying to do his job, but he got tired of doing it with his hands tied behind his back. This is what the documentary says about him, clip 11.
He says the drugs, the camps, the theft, the rot, and the disgrace of it all don't have to destroy Seattle. They're being allowed to.
Everybody's trying to do the right thing. It's just coming out wrong.
Listen to these next words carefully. Let them sink in.
You know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that the only thing I can equate it to is we're running a concentration camp without barbed wire up to and including the medical experiment of poisoning these people with drugs.
Right, and there's no barbed wire, there's no fences, so they're just roaming the streets. And you see them staggering along, even in this video. I read the article at the top of the segment, but even in this video, you see them staggering along on the street, mentally deranged, screaming, yelling at no one. And people on their way to work just walk right on by. It's everyday activity on the streets of Seattle. And here's a law enforcement official who says it's like a concentration camp. One more bit regarding this former police officer, clip 12.
I don't know how else to put it, and it's infuriating. Every camp I walked into, there was a weapon, multiple weapons. I found modified weapons. I was constantly on the side of the road talking to people that were swinging machetes, holding an axe, armed with knives. Our city has even gone so far as to say, well, this much of narcotics on your person's okay.
3 grams.
Yeah. Hey, that's okay. So that's user quantity. So, you know, when you start, you know, that process and people feel secure and okay having their drugs on them, what's to stop them from doing it? Now you're pretty much okaying narcotics. And the same officers that used to go out there and arrest them are now rendered impotent and can't do anything about it. And it's just a matter of political will on the part of our city to go out there and say, hey, you can't park your motorhome in this driveway with no engine in it, with all this filth around it. You can't do it. It's wrong. And stop them.
Wiebke says that if he had a chance to start a family again, would he raise it in Seattle? And he said, no way. No way would I start a family in Seattle. This documentary interviews another homeless person who said that every person she knows on the streets of Seattle has a drug addiction of some kind. Oh yes, 100%. Every single one. In a lot of ways, it's a drug crisis. And as you heard from that officer just a moment ago, the city officials are there to say, well, you know, let them have their drugs. It's just 3 grams. That does amount to 30 doses or 30 hits. But it's just, in the grand scheme of things, it's just a little bit of drugs. Let them have it. Let them have the heroin. And then let them roam the streets. And then let them set up a tent behind this place of business. And then let them do all of the filthy things that they do through the day. Right behind this reputable business. My father in the No Freedom booklet, he says, America leads the world in demand for mind-damaging, escapist drugs. Is that freedom? How many of these people have gotten hooked on drugs and cannot stop? Even low levels of drug use can do irreparable damage to their minds. On top of that disastrous effect, how many of these people are injecting or sniffing away increasing portions of their incomes at their family's expense? How many are having to resort to even more unsavory activities to fund their drug habits? He said, many people would consider it freedom to destroy their lives with deadly drugs. That is not freedom. It's slavery. It's being enslaved to drugs. And we're being overcome by it. Our cities are being overcome by it. One final clip from this documentary. Here's clip 13.
You wouldn't wish this life on your worst enemy.
No.
Right?
No. But it's remarkable that people are choosing this. Even though you hear the statistics from the city that, oh, people don't want to do this, it's miserable, there's a compassion for people. The people you see, and I see in camps, many of them are choosing to stay this way because of all the drug habits they have.
That's all driven by the drugs.
Yes.
Almost the drugs drives everything we see here, right?
I would pretty much say that. Substance abuse, heroin, meth, even marijuana to some extent, is the driving factor why they stay out here.
They stay out there. They choose it. They like it. You heard from one of them earlier. He knows how to play the system. He gets all the freebies, and then when he does go into jail, he knows he's coming right back out. And the thing is, all of this, homelessness, drug use, they've become such politically charged issues, and you have a lot of politicians, and even some in the Seattle Police Department, that say, hey, let them have their drugs. But what a cost to this once beautiful city. I was listening to Mark Levin earlier this week. He was talking about media malpractice. He was talking about just the horrible and criminal, really, the criminal attack on the president of the United States coming from media types all across the country. And he said, you just can't get honest coverage. You can't get any good reporting except, he said, except occasionally on the local level. And here's a perfect example of that. Here's a local report from a TV station in Seattle. And yet for the national media, for the mainstream media, there's nothing but silence. You wouldn't know. That's why so many people, when they visit Seattle or when they visit San Francisco, they're shocked. They go there for a convention or something, and they roam the streets one night just to look at beautiful San Francisco, and they're shocked. And they say, I don't ever want to come back here again. You wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know anything about it if you tuned in to CNN every night for your evening news. You would not know one thing about it. What are the solutions? This article, I don't have time to go through much of it. Just the cost. Economically, it's costing Seattle now $1 billion per year just to deal with the homelessness crisis. So there's another problem. It's problem on top of problem on top of problem. And everything that they try to do to solve it, the problems just get worse. And what does the prophecy say in Isaiah 1? The whole head is sick. The whole body is sick. The nation is sick from top to bottom. And the solution is God's kingdom. The solution is the wonderful world of tomorrow. That's described in the Bible too. You have the sickness in Isaiah 1. You have the wonderful world tomorrow in Isaiah 65. And all the unhappiness, every evil that's come upon humanity, it's all there, as Mr. Armstrong says in the Wonderful World Tomorrow booklet, it's all there because of transgression. We touched on this yesterday, Daniel 8:12. Our sins, our transgressions. Mr. Armstrong, he has that classic quote in the book saying, if everyone was keeping the Ten Commandments, if children honored their parents, if no one committed adultery, if we were all worshiping God on his Sabbath day, if we all put God first, if we stopped lying and cheating and coveting, what a wonderful world we would have. The wonderful world tomorrow. There would be, on the contrary, vigorous, vibrant, good health, Mr. Armstrong said, filled with dynamic interest in life, enthusiastic interest in constructive activities bringing happiness and joy. There would be cleanliness, vigorous activity, real progress, no slums, no degenerative backward races or areas of earth, nowhere. It would be utopia. That's coming. That's coming. And soon. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, td@kpcg.fm, and don't forget to send us a voice message this weekend. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you on Monday.